हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीहद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Okay, page 50, chapter 87, canto 10. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, the personified Vedas continued, Dear Lord, anyone who by your grace has understood the glories of your lotus feet is callous to material happiness and distress. The material pangs are inevitable as long as we exist within the material world. Right, so that's the point. They're inevitable. They're not going to go away. The point is that it comes to the point is that they're callous to that. They're not worried about it. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, if we're approaching religion because it will get rid of material suffering, it's not that it'll get rid of the causes for suffering. It gets rid of that you're affected by those causes of suffering. Right? And if one thinks, but that's not very good. But things that you don't consider suffering, somebody else does. The things that you consider suffering, others don't. Does that make sense? So it's quite relative. So it's just a matter, if you're unaffected by it, then you've attained the position. The idea that religion will create a perfect material world, that doesn't exist, because perfect means in connection with Krishna. So if everybody's Krishna conscious, then you'll see everything will function in a perfect way. Right? Other than, you know, people are born and die. That's kind of going to stick around. Right? But the whole thing is that it's about one's unaffected. One has a higher taste, one doesn't worry about it. You know, just like, let's say, for you, somehow or another something's happened, so it's an excellent day. So even if you come across something that's not ideal or other person, it doesn't bother you. You know, so it's not so important, or you know, we'll worry about it later or something. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. We've had that experience, or no one has that experience.
In the movie, so.
Yes, so you've seen it in the movie, right? Okay, so now you know what you were talking about. Like that.
When the pain is coming from the Supreme Lord or our own karma, that's acceptable. When the other people are giving pain, their misuse of free will, then what we should?
Why? How does that make it different?
What's the question?
The question is this: if I cause my own suffering, or Krishna causes my suffering, that's okay. But if anybody else dares to cause me suffering, that's intolerable. So what are we supposed to do?
We have our free will to respond, so that they don't again misbehave. Or
yeah, but they have their free will.
Yeah.
So, okay, let us do like this. If we want to look at that, what should they do about your free will that bothers them?
Good point.
Huh? No. I could never disturb anybody else. I'm perfect. He doesn't even hear what I'm saying. I've sometimes seen that. You're talking to somebody, and you say something. They heard the words, but it's so different than what they're expecting. Or that they're, huh? What? Huh? You know, it's just, you can see it because there's this bewildered look rather than, what are you talking about? Or I can't hear you. Or, you know, are you speaking English? Or, you know, like that. You know,
it's a, me? This
yeah,
job?
Me? What? Huh? That's it. You know, there's the adiatmic, adidaivic, adibhotic, and adiperfect. You know, so I fall into that last category. So how could I bother anybody? The whole point is you're in the material world. Now, what happens if by arrangement all these other living entities, by them cooperating together, you end up with some very nice situation?
Good.
Are you okay with that? Or are you disturbed at why they're using their free will to create a nice situation? Because whether it's a nice situation or a bad situation, it's still mundane. So why are they creating all these mundane situations? Is that how we're looking at it? Or the good situations are okay, but the bad ones are the problem?
Good situations are okay, because then we can focus on our real purpose.
And that real purpose is?
Cultivating devotion service.
So it's not heaven on earth, goodwill to all men. What is it? Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. You know.
Otherwise, we are like worrying what next step they will take, how to protect oneself. You know,
how to protect oneself. Oh, I see. The guy's already sat in your spot at Prashad, and then a couple of nights ago he slept in your spot like that. What's going to happen next? Is that what we're talking about? Okay. What about if you're dependent upon Krishna, and how do you know Krishna didn't arrange it through this person? Somebody has to do it. Someone has to sleep in your spot.
Why?
It's like Goldilocks, right? You know Goldilocks? You don't know the story about Goldilocks and the Three Bears? Yeah. I'm not getting anywhere by this approach. Okay. So, human life is for what purpose?
I'm going back to Godhead.
Okay. And going back to Godhead, who's going to go back to Godhead?
I hear the soul.
Well, the soul's going back to Godhead. You're not taking your body with you?
It'll be here.
Huh?
The body will be left here.
It'll be left here. Okay. So, is that a problem?
Yeah.
You want to take this body with you? This is the body you want in the spiritual world.
No. Okay.
Okay. Okay. We'll go back on that. Okay. So that's okay that this body is left here. And why is it okay?
We'll get a spiritual body.
Okay. We'll get a spiritual body. But that's all. It means otherwise, if we didn't get a spiritual body, this body's fabulous.
No.
Right. So the point is this body is only as useful as it is in being used in Krishna consciousness. Right. So the environment around us is only important in as much as we can be Krishna conscious. Right. So now the soul, seeing that it's not the body, technically does it require the body to be Krishna conscious? I mean, is the Krishna consciousness of the soul dependent upon the body? Ki? Ki? AC. Kon AC? Oh, Vaishya building it. Vaishya building it. Yeah, why not? So, therefore, the soul technically can be Krishna conscious despite what goes on around them. Right? Now, so we are endeavoring for being always Krishna conscious. And so what gets in the way of us being Krishna conscious in all situations?
In terms of our past deeds.
Okay. No, but that'll give reactions. But what's the actual problem?
Our unwillingness to serve.
Okay, so in other words, some material consciousness, some attachment, some repulsion, some like this, some desire for, you know, yeah. So, is that actually favorable?
It is not.
No. So then, that means if it's not favorable, it's always going to be giving trouble. Right? So now we're giving trouble. How do you expect that trouble to come? Because it's your trouble. You're creating trouble for yourself. So, accordingly, how do you receive your trouble? Do you produce the trouble yourself, or?
Sometimes. Usually it comes from the people around, the environment around.
Right. So then, you're okay with trouble that you've created yourself, or Krishna creates, but not when anybody else. But the point is, the trouble you create comes to you from other people. It comes from the mind, comes from other people, comes from the you know, adidaivik, you know, from the material nature. Like it rains, you're supposed to go to class, it's raining. Right? Yeah, so that's the aspect is that we're choosing, we'll only accept this and that, but you've created it.
And that is created by us.
Yeah, so then why get grumpy over something you created? If it's all about you, then, you know, you've created it, so. Right? Means Dharmaraj, the bull, then Kaliraj is giving him trouble. So when he's asked by Maharaj Parikit, who's giving you this trouble, he says that's hard to ascertain. You know, because in actuality, anything that I'm getting comes from you know, reactions that I've done myself. So I can't really blame anybody else. Though it's, you know, it's more satisfying to blame someone else.
And we can assume that anything happening to us is because of the past, our own mistakes.
Yeah, otherwise why is it happening to you? Why it's not happening to, you know, someone else?
Others are also disturbed by that scene.
Yeah, but so many things are happening to them, like you're driving down Wood Street and you look over when you cross Theater Road that how Kamek Street is completely, you know, jammed. Right? And so, how do you feel? You're crossing Theater Road, going to Albert Road. And on Albert Road, you don't see any jam. So you feel bad, you feel okay, you feel... Yeah, it's great, yeah. So then... So, but they're all suffering. You don't care. Now, what if you were on Kamek Street and you're looking over at Wood Street? Yeah. So the point is that we have to understand it's just the way the material world is. So how it's going to be arranged at what time? Yeah. Yeah. So. Why get worried about it? What he's pointing out here is the personified Vedas are saying that one by Krishna's grace, one is understand Krishna's glories. Then they're callous to, you know, the effect of the material world. They don't care if it's nice or not nice. They're so absorbed in Krishna. Why would they care? Right? Does that make sense? Now let us say we take, you know, I would expect there is one, the mayor of Calcutta. Right? I've never seen her, whatever it is, there must be one. Now, then he finds out that there's always traffic jams there. Now, how does he feel?
Disturbed.
Yes, disturbed. Right? So, because he's got to see to the whole thing. You know what I'm saying? So, the point is one goes beyond. One just deals with it. If it's something that your service is there, you have to go around it, then you do. You have to do something about it, then you do. But the idea is that, no, perfection, material world, and all other living entities should just do everything so perfect. So for me, then it's just a cakewalk. You know, it's just very smooth and perfect, and nothing ever goes wrong. And that would be the perfection of devotional service. You know, just like we see, even, you know, in Krishna's pastimes. They get up every morning, the birds are chirping, they're all singing their songs, and it just goes like that the whole day. Nothing ever goes wrong. You know, there's no Trinavarta, there's no Putana, there's no Vatsasura, there's no Bakasura, there's no Kamsa, you know, no Jarasandha, you know, no Kalayavana, you know, no one's blaming Krishna about anything like that, you know, like with the Shaman Taka Jewel. None of this ever happens, right? So the point is that our saying it should always go perfect the way we want it, that's not actually the point. It's that we're able to act perfectly no matter what happens. Not that everything around us should be perfect, then I'll be perfect. Because then that means you're dependent upon material nature for your Krishna consciousness. Right? But if we see that the soul has no connection to the material nature, then the point is we as the soul, we don't need to be affected. Not that we aren't, but we don't need to be. So if we're Krishna conscious, that's when we stop being affected. Does that make sense?
Where this concept comes from, that we always want to be, that everything will be perfect around us?
Because we want everything to be perfect, you know, to do nice things for Krishna. So it's for Krishna's happiness. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's why we're always endeavoring to make the perfect arrangement. But even in that, then there's always these varieties and obstacles, because that's, you have to remember, is that you're doing pastimes eternally. So there needs to be variety. Mm. Like that. Like even we see here, let's say everything's perfect. Everything's perfectly arranged. Every day goes exactly the same way. No, nothing goes wrong. So what do we do? We do something to make something wrong. Or we're upset at how good everything is. Or
boring.
Yeah, it becomes boring. So that's why the variety is there. It's the getting over that obstacle that makes it something special. You know what I'm saying? That's where you can express. Because all these things are about expressing that devotion to Krishna. And so these are just ways to do it. That one tries to overcome these and become, you know, stable. So the steadiness is that you're always engaged in Krishna's service with that same determination, same enthusiasm. But the situations you're in may be constantly adjusting. You know, you try to create something that there's some regularity. But that's why the more material energy we deal with, the more the irregularity is going to be there. Right? And so, and why do we deal with more material energy?
Greed,
because of attachment, because of desires. Right? So that's why we do. So then we get more trouble for that. But we want that. But as we see that we only need to please Krishna, so those areas in your life that are actually useful in serving Krishna, or, you know, your duties and all those things to do, one does that, one doesn't go beyond that. Does that make sense? So not going beyond that, that reduces the amount of obstacles that are there. And so then we can be more stable in, you know, sadhana and other aspects. You know, instead of being, friends with 5 million people, then, you know, on Facebook, then we're only friends with, you know, those that it matters. Okay. Does that make sense? So, you have to see what it is that's actually useful. And then use that in Krishna's service. So, when we take on more things due to attachment, we just give ourselves trouble. Does that make sense? So the whole point is that if we go beyond this, we're not affected by the trouble. It means that we're always so absorbed in Krishna that, one, we're not creating extra trouble, and two, the material world means this trouble, and three is that variety and all that we are interested in anyway. As long as we get a favorable experience from the variety, we don't mind, even if it's completely different or totally crazy. But if we get a bad experience, then that we don't like at all. You know, like that. So the point is when you're Krishna conscious, you're unaffected by these things. So? Yes? Right? In other words, then someone sleeping in your spot, sleep in another spot. Because when you're asleep, do you know? Then? You know, it's just like in your dream, you're supposed to be here. But because you had to move over 10 feet to, in your dream, so then when you try to walk through the door in your dream, you always hit the, you hit the wall 10 feet away from the door because you're sleeping in the wrong spot. Is that how it works?
Yes.
No. So then, you know, it doesn't matter. Yes? No?
We get the reactions, you know, to the activities that we perform.
We get a reaction for the activities, yes.
So, this is a general rule that has been followed.
Yes.
And there could be some exceptional cases where, you know, Krishna doesn't even give the reaction, you know, but he completely destroys the karmas. And then,
yeah, but why would he do that? Just some exceptional case? What does that mean, exceptional? Just, it happened to be that today he just decided, hey, you know, the... What are these exceptional cases?
No, I'm speaking from some connection with Vedanta Sutras, where Krishna completely destroys all the karmas.
Yes, but it also explains why. Haven't the personified Vedas explained that?
Yeah.
So then?
So then why that is not applied every time to everybody, all the devotees? Because that is more easy than giving a reaction.
Is it more easy than giving a reaction?
Yeah, because reaction.
Okay, here. Somebody does something wrong, you just sitting there and having no reaction is so much easier than yelling at the person.
Got it.
Okay. No? The point is you're not taking it back to the essential point. The essential point is you surrender to Krishna, you completely, you become a pure devotee of Krishna, then it's up to Krishna then how it goes. But if you haven't fully surrendered, there's no question that the karma goes away. No? If you fully surrendered, then reactions are only as Krishna sees would be useful in the exchange between you and Krishna and the devotees.
Because surrender is an ongoing process in sadhana bhakti.
Yes, yeah. So the point is that kind of, he takes everything away, we haven't got there yet. So don't think, well, he got it and he got it, so maybe I can get it. No, it's just you focus on surrender.
Mm-hmm.
Surrender is the thing.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how it is. Prahlad Mars is surrendered, so therefore they can't bother him. If we're surrendered like Prahlad Maharaj, then the material energy won't bother us either. It doesn't mean not, something's not happening. It just doesn't bother us.
Maharaj, the difficulty seems to be is that some people are very tolerant, but doesn't mean it's not painful for them. They're comfortable with that. They just have that ability to tolerate. But doesn't mean they're not bothered. It's just they don't express the bothering they have.
But then there's Krishna consciousness.
It is Krishna consciousness.
No, I'm saying, and then there's Krishna consciousness.
Oh.
I mean, somebody made me tolerant, intolerant, all this due to their previous activities.
Right.
But not being affected by it, that is due to Krishna consciousness. Means, why does the material energy bother us?
Because we did some wrong in before.
And why are we doing something wrong?
Because we don't know. Ignorance.
And why don't we know?
We're not interested.
And why aren't we interested?
Because we're attached to something.
We're attached to something.
Yeah.
And how is our identity with this attachment?
Strong identity.
And the identity is with?
The body.
The body, right. So, therefore, we're attached to the body. Therefore, things that happen to the body bother us.
Right.
If we're not attached to the body, does it bother us?
No.
Like it's happening to the guy across the room. Mosquitoes are bothering him. They're not bothering you. Are you feeling bad?
not
are you the what is it, paradukha dukhi, or you know, or are we the parasukha dukhi? It's like we're happy. They're biting him. They're not biting me. You know, it's like we should invite this guy all the time, right?
Why did he's not a child?
That's another thing. It's just, you know, so because then you're attached again to the body, right? So in other words, we're attached to the body, therefore, so we're attached to material energy, that's why material energy bothers us.
Right.
But if our attachment is not in the material world, it's in the spiritual world, why would the material things bother us? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the whole thing. You know, it's just like, let's say you're traveling and you're someplace that's not at your place. And there's something happening, a storm or some other thing like that. So, you know, you get through that, but then you want to know how it's going in your place. So as long as your place is fine, you know, it's a completely sunny day, everything's perfect, birds are chirping and butterflies are flitting and, you know, all that, then you're fine, even though the place you're in is not going so ideal. Mm-hmm. So if you're situated in the spiritual world, then why would the material world bother you? So the only thing that bothers is that all these other, how you say, I think it's Prahlad Maharaj, all the other fools and rascals that are in the material world, they're being bothered because they don't know Krishna. So that's what bothers you, is that they're not Krishna conscious. Mm-hmm. So then you work in such a way to see if they can become Krishna conscious. Is that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maharaj, you say that when we are absorbed in Krishna, then the botherations don't bother us, the troubles don't bother us. So, absorption in Krishna means absorption in His name. However, at the level of sadhana, it's my personal thing, not generally, that I don't identify the name with that person. Okay, I feel that the name and the name are non-living. I mean, that state has not yet developed. On the other hand, if I think of the rupa, or the form, or the guna lila, then that is more appreciating. So, the difficulty is that the only thing is, we're supposed to chant the holy name. That's how we go step by step, like Naam Rupa Guna Lila and other things. Then how to be absorbed when at the first way itself it's a failure for me? Absorption in the Naam.
Point is to be absorbed in Krishna. So however it works, then what's the problem? It's like this. This is not going to work. The point is that we're absorbed in Krishna. And so if we can be absorbed, then it works. Why should we worry about details like that? Right? Because if you're absorbed in the form, then with time you'll appreciate the name, because the name is Krishna. The person with the form, this is his name. Like you might like a friend, but you think his name is funny, you know. You know, who's got a name like Magoo? You know, it's like, you know, like that. So it's weird, but you like the guy. But in this case, the name's perfect. We may not have that attraction, but if we like the form, then great.
Mm-hmm. So it works anyway. Not necessarily we need to stop the name.
It's not a matter of that. It's just a matter of being absorbed. See, when we always look at it from the secondary point, then there'll always be bewilderment. That it's got to work in a particular way, or this way, or that way. Oh, if it doesn't, oh, it's going to work in any way at all. No, it's not that either. It's be absorbed in Krishna. You know, like someone likes the kirtan more, someone is the prashad, someone is the association of devotees, someone is like the reading, so what does it matter? Whatever way we're attracted to Krishna, we absorb ourselves. Okay? Yeah. The material pangs are inevitable as long as we exist within this material world. But a devotee does not divert his attention to such actions and reactions, which are the results of pious and impious activities. Nor is the devotee very much disturbed or pleased by praise or condemnation from people in general. A devotee is sometimes greatly praised because of his transcendental activities, and sometimes he is criticized, even though there is no reason for adverse criticism. The pure devotee, however, is always callous to praise or condemnation by ordinary people. Actually, the devotee's activities are on the transcendental plane. He is not interested in the praise or condemnation of people engaged in material activities. If the devotee can thus maintain his transcendental position, his liberation in this life and the next is guaranteed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The devotee's transcendental position within this material world is maintained in the association of pure devotees. Simply by hearing the glorious activities enacted by the Lord in different ages and in different incarnations. The Krishna conscious movement is based on this principle. A devotee does not care whether or not he is liberated. He is eager only for devotional service. You know, so we mentioned that one becomes liberated, it just shows that what is the power of it and how it nicely situates it. But we're not worried about liberation, we're worried about being in devotional service. Because liberation is the situation. Devotional service is the actual absorption, is the focus. Right? Devotional service means that one does not do anything independent of the sanction of the acharyas. The actions of the Krishna conscious movement are directed by the previous acharyas, headed by Srila Rupa Goswami. In the association of devotees following these principles, a devotee is able to perfectly maintain his transcendental position. And so it comes by what is directed by the previous acharyas. Like from this morning, it's not directed by what goes on in the modern world. It's what the acharyas give, because it's Krishna's creation and it works how Krishna wants. People misuse it and this and that and seemingly get results, it doesn't mean that it's actually happening. So that makes sense. So the whole point is the movement is for that, following the instructions given by the previous acharyas through our acharya. A person who tries to understand Krishna with full knowledge and devotion by following in the footsteps of previous acharyas, conversant with scientific knowledge of the Supreme Lord, is praiseworthy. Such a devotee can understand that all conditions of life, favorable and unfavorable, are created by the supreme will of the Lord. And when he has fully surrendered unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, he does not care whether his condition of life is favorable or unfavorable. A devotee takes even an unfavorable condition to be the special favor of the Personality of Godhead. Actually, there are no unfavorable conditions for a devotee. Yes? No? Knowing that, everything is coming by the will of the Lord. He sees every condition as favorable. And in any condition of life, he is simply enthusiastic to discharge his devotional service. Yes?
Nowadays, very popular things that devotees get into is, you know, this positive thinking. It's the behavioral thing. Like you try to change your patterns of thoughts, and by this you influence the situation. Even though it's really bad, you say it's good.
You influence the situation or you influence your perspective of it?
Your perspective, which eventually will influence the situation.
So in other words, it's just another trick how to be the supreme controller.
Yes.
So is that what's important, or why do we need to influence the situation?
To be able to always see the positive.
And what is the positive?
Everything is good for me.
And how is it good for you?
I can enjoy it.
So therefore we started one is I'm the supreme controller, so I can be the supreme enjoyer. So how is this spiritual?
That's my question.
It's not. See, the whole point is that who would get into that kind of thing?
New Age people.
But at the same time is, what is the background of that?
Hippie.
No, they don't. It's... Yeah, but it's not so much about it's more about enjoying and the control. But you know what I'm saying is that they're not confident about this. They're not. They're negative about everything and all that. So that's one aspect. So then they're looking at the positive as an alternative. So in one sense, that's a nice thing. It's not that being positive, but what is actual being positive about the situation? What is real positivity?
To see it as in Krishna consciousness.
To see it in connection with Krishna. So if there's thinking that being positive is a good thing, but then actually be positive. Why be a false positive? It's like, how are you doing? Great, but there's always room for improvement. At what point do you run out of these little things to say? And at what point does everybody get bored of these little things to say?
Quite enthusiastic.
Yeah, but that means that they've just come across those things. Right? So, if one is working on a very gross platform, then you come across that there's such a thing as qualities. Then you might be very enamored by them. You're like children, they're enamored by something new. But the point is these things are always there. The spiritual, the metaphysical, the intellectual, the emotional, the sensual, all these things, they're all there already. And the point is when it mentions material, it means all material. Even if it's subtle or metaphysical, which is beyond that, it's not just the subtle on the emotional platform. Subtle meaning you have to use the intelligence to catch that. But it's all material. So then why would that be the thing? And why? And then why are we negative?
You're not getting what you want.
Okay, so that means then we're being negative means we're upset. Mm-hmm. And then if we work back from there, then why are we upset? We didn't get what we want. And so then what's actually the problem here? It means we want material things. When Krishna says in the Gita, you focus on something, you become attached to it. And then when you don't get it, then you get angry. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, because of material perspective, that's why we're suffering and we're negative. And then the alternative is just going to be some system of looking at everything positive all the time. But how can you do that? By what measure do you say that this is positive? How do we define how to be positive in this? You go out and, to go to the wherever you're going, and your vehicle has a flat tire. So how do we turn this all into a positive thing?
Maybe I wasn't supposed to go there. Something bad would happen.
Okay.
This is how they do it.
Okay. What about maybe you're not supposed to ride, you're supposed to get some exercise, and exercise is very good for you.
It's also positive.
Yeah, but would they do that?
Probably not.
Yeah. So in other words, it's just a matter of now, by going into that, then it gives rise to what was the reaction? Oh, there's something bad, I'm not supposed to go, this and that. Have we connected to Krishna at all there? No, so all we're bringing out is the superstitious side.
Yeah.
You know, so if superstition is valuable to you, then it's an udipan for going into that.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So it's just they're going to still work within the net. They're not really going to change. They're just going to find ways to encourage their own material conditioning in a way that they feel comfortable.
Mm.
But the actual point is going to be is Krishna consciousness. You know, so then, if it's a matter of, oh, they're not supposed to go, then, so now what should they be doing? They're supposed to be Krishna conscious. How to be, so what would be the alternative now to do to be Krishna conscious? Rather than, oh, I shouldn't go, I had this responsible thing, I'm not supposed to go, so I'll just go back in the house and do nothing. Or, you know, supposed to go over to a friend's house, well, I didn't really want to go anyway, so therefore go. You know. Okay, let's take another thing. Let's say someone in the family is sick and they're going to take them over to the doctor's place or the hospital, and they come out and now the tire's flat. Now, what positive spin are they going to put?
I'm not so good in this.
Yeah, but my point is they'll work it out. They won't go, oh, well, maybe we're not supposed to go.
No.
So that's our point. So if it's about Krishna, if it's service you're supposed to do, then you'll figure it out. You'll walk, you'll call, you get a taxi, you'll do something else, you'll do something. So the point is that you will perform activities that then you'll work around these obstacles to perform your service. So the whole point is you focus on the aspect of the service, then you may see, okay, there's too many things here, maybe it's not supposed to happen. But we see is that if we're attached to it, then we make it happen anyway. While the other one means we were attached, it didn't happen, and then we get angry. Why wouldn't you use the same thing and just keep going until you get it? You know what I'm saying? Because that's also... That's in other words, the successful people use that one, and the emotional people use this other one. Just be positive and this and that, you know. Because you can see, is if they're not positive, many times they can be really, really negative. So, you know, in one sense, you know, better than positive, but at the same time, as you could consider finding a slightly different group of swajatis. Yes. So the whole thing is material solutions don't solve any material problems. Maybe it did right now, but then tomorrow, the next day, what about in the long term? Because if we don't connect it to Krishna, then it doesn't improve our position. That's what the Shrutis are pointing out, is that when you are absorbed in Krishna, then nothing by Krishna's grace, then one's callous to material happiness and distress. So if you're callous to material happiness and distress, therefore, you're not looking for happiness, you're not disturbed by distress. So therefore, if you're always absorbed in Krishna, isn't that the real positiveness?
Yes.
Like that. So that's what these personified Vedas, and we see the Acharyas are talking, is we shouldn't try to use these material solutions. Because they'll do this, and how long will they do it for? Some can do it for a few years, you know, some will do it for, you know, 6 months, some will do it for a few days, you know, some will talk about it but not do it. So the thing is it can't give a long-term situation, it won't work. Right? Does that make sense? So, because the problem is material attachment and not being attached to Krishna, that's the real root. So it's not that I'm negative. No, why are you negative? You know, I'm not negative. I'm not getting what I want. I should be positive. Then I'll get what I want. The problem is you want material things. That's the problem. Right? So when we see things in connection with Krishna, then what is to be used in Krishna's service, then we'll work on it the best way we can to make it work. Like that. You'll keep that because you have a goal, you have something, so it's there. But the other is just you, so therefore you don't get, then it's someone else's fault, it's this, you get angry. When it's no, we just have to continue. This is part of what happens. So. Right? Prabhupada points out. One is criticized even for adverse, when there's no reason for it. Things go wrong even though technically they shouldn't. But that's just the way it works. You know what I'm saying?
When you're in the temple or in the class like this, then absorption in Krishna is very easy. On the other hand, when you are dealing with the indirect, the secondary things, then the absorption is not maintained. And so how to, in all circumstances, you know, consistently maintain this steady absorption in Krishna?
By seeing Krishna in everything, and everything connected to Krishna. Isn't that what we've been discussing for since ninth canto?
it's difficult to practice, or it's very difficult to perceive Krishna in everything that we.
But you have an alternative?
No, there's no alternative.
Okay, then. You know, you want it, then you go for it. Let me see. Whatever you want, it's a trouble. Right? Is there anything that just is super easy?
Things you don't want. Things you don't want.
Things you don't want. Okay. But then at least that's a start. Something's easy. But you understand? So it's just, that's what it is. So there's not something else. Okay, this is difficult. Is there an alternative?
And if there is,
then you let us know. The personified Shrutis don't seem to think that there's something else. Or the Acharyas, or Srila Prabhupada. Then, you know, surrender to Krishna, service to Krishna. That is the process. So that's why we hear it from so many angles, so that we get convinced, because we think, okay, I accept this one, but not this one. You know, and then it convinced that, well, what about this one? You know, it's like what we see in the Vedanta Sutra. They just keep going, because, why? Because of material attachment. So we do the same thing. So it's just a matter of being convinced from all angles. Then we see that, you know, it goes very nicely. So it's just a matter of being convinced that Krishna consciousness is the only thing that, you know, that the individual as a soul can be satisfied doing. Nothing else will give, because we say, no, but you can get, means who's gotten? Where is it? Who has it?
Heard.
Huh? It's been heard about. Yeah. Means we saw that Shah Rukh, then after it didn't work out, because she married that guy, and then it didn't work out, so then he left on a train, mind you, to Canada, and then did a 3-year stint there. Then he came back for something, he was visiting friends. He happened to be walking down the street. Then he bumps into that same lady, and then he finds out that she didn't actually marry the guy, and she's been, you know, waiting for him because he left, and she didn't know where he went, and he didn't keep contact because she thought she's doing her thing. Then he finds out that, you know, she was got married, and you know the movie.
Which is this?
Yes. So then, you know, then they find out, then they start talking to each other. Okay? But then, what about that afternoon or the next day? Or is that it? No, that's where the movie ends. Right? You know, Cinderella. Okay, the prince comes, and he, you know, finally getting past the, you know, evil mother-in-law and evil sisters. Then she tries on the shoe, it fits. And then, you know, then that's it. That's where it ends. So, where does it actually happen? Where is this? We're saying, because that moment, everybody has a moment here and there, but we're talking about it'll happen eternally. But where is it? Where does it happen?
In the movie.
No, it only goes up to that point and stops. I mean, you say, well, at least they got to that moment, you know. So, but that it stops there. That's when they end. The music swells, they pull back the camera, the credits roll, you know, you're done. Because who would be able to write a script for that perfect life? Right? Yes, here, that's it. Sukadeva Goswami and Krishna and his pastimes and all that. That's the perfect script. But everything else, you can't, you know. So, when we're convinced that, no, we get by, we you know, like that. You know, it's like, are there retorts like, oh, how are you doing? I'm surviving. You know, or, you know, stuff like that. Or, you know, we get on. Or, you know, it could be worse. Or, you know, yeah, like that. So the whole point is that it these things are there. And so then, why we would think that it's going to be perfect. So when we understand the material world is not perfect, then we can be convinced that Krishna consciousness is perfect. Because they're giving an example of people's lives and how it works. And so then we can put the faith there. putting the faith there, then we can endeavor for that practice. And any obstacles could come, we can go. Someone says, oh, well, these are just fairy tales. It's like, and coming from the person who's complaining, you know, is inspired by fairy tales. You know, who are the people that inspire them? Where are they now?
Dead.
Yeah. Dead. Like doornail dead. You know, it says, I mean, it says, that should have been an indication, right? I mean, Caesar, how did it go out for him? Did he live a long life and die at the end? Or his people, or the other associates in administration, killed him?
He died.
Yes, okay. But who killed him? The guys in administration, right? And so then you have someone who takes on that name. Let's say, for example, Tsar. How did it work out for him? The same. The guys in administration around him killed him. You know, should have been an indication.
But someone died. And died of their own problems.
Yeah, but it's so did Caesar. It went along for some time, and then it's just a matter of how much the Caesar is, you know. You know, so the point is that where is that person, or where is that role that everything works perfectly all the time, materially? Right? It doesn't exist. So it's a fairy tale. And then people go, well, this, you know, Krishna book is a fairy tale. They say, what do you mean? These are real people. And they're eternal, you know. And, you know, how are your guys doing? How's your fairy tale faring? You know?
He was accused of something that would say that it's a fairy tale. Somebody came back and said, that's real.
Which one?
Just the person who read the Krishna book. He came back and said, that's real. Why are you saying it's a fairy tale?
Which one?
Krishna book.
Krishna book. Oh, so somebody just read it and said it's a fairy tale. Yeah. Yeah, so that's the whole thing. Except it's real. So it's just a matter of where you put your faith. Because it's always something outside of yourself, something like this. So when the faith is in something transcendental, that's called faith. And when it's in something material, then it's unfortunate. That makes sense? So we're trying to bridge that gap. You know, make that step between the material world and the spiritual world and not fall into the void in between, right? Yeah. So.
When somebody asked Prabhupada something like this about the material world, he said, yeah, spiritual life is difficult, but material life is impossible.
Yeah, so perfect their answer, right? Material life, spiritual life is difficult, but material life is impossible. Yeah, that sums it up.
Same thing that you're saying, that these are real stories or real life. Prabhupada was saying that they say Krishna dancing with other people's wife is mythology. Your life is mythology.
Yeah. Yeah, at least 5,000 years later, they're still talking about Krishna. Well, him, they don't even talk about while he's alive. Right? You know. Yeah.
Same point what you're discussing right now, beginning of the class. Killing of Vritrasura, 6th canto. The purports, 6th canto, 12th chapter. Purports, all same points have been discussed.
Oh, okay. Okay, then. Very good. Okay. A person who tries to understand Krishna with full knowledge and devotion by following in the footsteps of previous acharyas, conversant with scientific knowledge of the Supreme Lord, is praiseworthy. Such a devotee can understand that all conditions of life, favorable and unfavorable, are created by the supreme will of the Lord. And when he has fully surrendered under the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, he does not care whether his condition of life is favorable or unfavorable. It's not a matter of, okay, if Krishna is doing it, so he's to blame, so why did that happen? No, you don't care. He even says it, does not care. A devotee takes even an unfavorable condition to be the special favor of the personality of Godhead. Actually, there are no unfavorable conditions for a devotee. Knowing that everything is coming by the will of the Lord, he sees every condition as favorable. and in any condition of life, he is simply enthusiastic to discharge his devotional service. So it means he's enthusiastic to discharge the service. It's not that he's taking on trying to create this positive vibe and all that, and will you quit, you know, bothering my positive vibe here. I'm working very hard to make this positive vibe and you keep messing it up, so, you know, could you stop being so negative? And, you know, that's not the point. You're enthusiastic to do service. Because the point is okay, one's positive, that's a quality. Now what are you supposed to do with that? Just like, let's say I have some food. Okay? So if it's just about the taste of it, then how do we define that? That's there, but let's say, you know, it just means your only interest in food is the taste. You know what I'm saying? It means what category is this?
Huh?
That's there, but I'm saying, is it devotional service or is it sense gratification?
Sense.
Okay. So, why? Because the aspect of the sense, we have left it just at that point. Now, what if we go into subtler things like moods? Right? So, a positive mood. Okay. We have a positive mood, but it stops there. I just want to experience a positive mood. Mm-hmm. So, is it devotional service or is it sense gratification? It's sense gratification. It may be a subtler form, but it's still sense gratification. I want to experience different moods and feelings and feel good and all that. And, you know, people like me and I feel part of it and I feel, you know, like that. Then I'll feel enthused. But where's Krishna? You understand? So the problem comes is that gross or subtle, it's just about one's enjoyment. And then the impersonalists take it a step beyond that. Is they're not interested in these. They just want that feeling of being absorbed in Brahman, that Brahmananda. Because they want the Ananda from being absorbed in them. So it's not as service to Brahman or, you know, doing anything practical. They just want their own experience. So we see in all these conditions, it's about your own experience. You know, or extending the sense gratification to, you know, friends, relatives, or whatever. But the point is it's about sense gratification. Right? Your enjoyment, whether it's on the physical, the emotional, the intellectual platform. That's what, you know, what's there. So that's why it will never satisfy. It's just like being grumpy won't satisfy you, being happy won't satisfy you. Because the point is, if you're always happy, you're going to have trouble finding friends. Because then who do you hang out with? Because grumpy people want to be grumpy. You're happy. You're ruining the mood. You know, now and again they like, as if it's a light grumpy, it just happened by some little thing and you make them happy, then they're good. But if they got some serious, you know, like authority issue, political issue, something like that, that in acts they want to grind, a happy person just is not what you want around. You know, so, you know, who can you be friends with? You'll be alone. But you can be friends with those who are trying to be positive, though they're not positive. And in this way, then, you know, like that. But it's all about it's all about subtle taste of qualities. But that's why it's about that the gross, the activities and, the, you know, all these things, the knowledge, the qualities, all these things, they all have to be engaged in Krishna's service. So the gross and subtle. So that's what we were saying, how we started the conversation. Someone who generally tends to be gross all their life, now by Krishna consciousness, they become purified enough to be able to appreciate and notice that there's something subtle, you know, like emotions and qualities and these kind of things. Then now they want to experience that. But the point is that's only come about by Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? Yeah. So one has to see is that even subtle things, if they're not connected to Krishna, there's still a problem. Good things, nice things, like philanthropic things that we were discussing before in the previous verse, if that's not, is still mundane, then let alone just being positive. Because philanthropic means you're positive and doing something about it. And if that's not enough, then... This devotional attitude is explained in the Bhagavad Gita. A devotee is never distressed in reverse conditions of life, nor is he overjoyed in favorable conditions. In the higher stage of devotional service, the devotee is not even concerned with the list of do's and do nots. Such a position can be maintained only by following the footsteps of the acharyas. Right, so that's the solution, not reading the latest How to Be Positive book. No, you have to read from the acharyas, meaning sampradaya kind of dudes, not hard. Psychologists.
Hard. Somehow it's hard.
Yeah. Because a pure devotee follows in the footsteps of the acharyas, any action he performs to discharge devotional service should be understood to be on the transcendental platform. Lord Krishna therefore instructs us that an acharya is above criticism. A neophyte devotee should not consider himself to be on the same plane as the acharya. It should be accepted that the acharyas are on the same platform as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as such, neither Krishna nor his representative acharya should be subjected to any adverse criticism by the neophyte devotees. Right? Why does he point out neophytes and madhyamas? Because madhyamas aren't going to criticize. Right, it's neophytes because they have an attachment, and then therefore, then somehow or another, then either Krishna and the acharyas aren't providing the facility you want, or by following the process they're running into difficulty as they perceive it, and so they're getting trouble, or they're getting this trouble and all that, but ultimately because Krishna is the cause of all causes, it's his problem. So then, yes.
Can we say that madhyamas, even though they do see the faults, it might be.
But they don't see the faults in Krishna and the acharyas. That's what it's pointing out here, is that, and neither Krishna or his representative should be subjected to any adverse criticism by the neophyte devotees. So I'm saying the madhyama wouldn't criticize.
But my point is that authority in madhyamas, they can see some faults. They just don't criticize as neophytes and just enjoy it. They might point out if that's their position, or they might think the way how to counter it.
That's there. It means specifically if it's something that you can do or something that you can influence to work properly. So that, but what's the point of it? What's the point of it? Why try to correct this position?
To make it better for Krishna consciousness, for other devotees, and also to help others not to criticize but see how to deal with it.
Yes. But then, at the same time, are we dealing here with the acharyas? The acharyas, so that's the point. You won't find any fault there. We may be fine, our contemporaries or our peers or other things like that, that we might find something. But it's still not ideal. One should try to go beyond that also. But the point is Krishna and the acharyas, then where's the fault? So that's not going to happen. But we see neophytes, sometimes they get upset with Krishna or others because, they give all these rules, or it's not working out, or I'm working so hard, why aren't I getting all my material facilities, or, like that. So they'll do like that. That's the whole point. Because of the attachments. Why we mention the mudra, because there, that is not so much about their attachments. They may have their conditioning like that, but it's not about the attachments like that. They may be there just by habit, but if they're pointed out or dealt with, then you can work with them. Is that? The Shruti is concluded. Because you are unlimited, neither the lords of heaven nor even you yourself can ever reach the end of your glories. The countless universes, right, because he himself means as Ananta Sesh, has not reached the end. The countless universes, each enveloped in its shell, are compelled by the wheel of time to wander within you, like particles of dust blowing about in the sky. The Shrutis, following their method of eliminating everything separate from the Lord, became successful by revealing you as the final conclusion. Right, so that's the success, is when you see everything connected to Krishna. So here, they're giving that philosophy. So seeing it connected to Krishna, that's the perfection. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, summarizing all the contents of what they said, all types of Shruti now describe the Lord by defining his sarup and the glories of his sarup through direct meaning, mukya, and indirect meaning, lakshana, of words. But seeing that they cannot finish glorifying, taking the opportunity, some of the Shrutis conclude with one verse, repeating what they said in the beginning. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, The personified Vedas thus worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in different ways. Offering worship to the Supreme Lord by praying means remembering his transcendental qualities, pastimes, and activities. But the Lord's pastime and activity qualities are unlimited. It is not possible for us to remember all the qualities of the Lord. Therefore, the personified Vedas worship to the best of their ability, and at the end they spoke as follows. Quote, "Dear Lord, although Lord Brahma, the predominating deity of the highest planet, Brahmaloka, and King Indra, the predominating demigod of the heavenly planets, as well as the predominating deities of such planets as the sun and moon, are all very confidential directors of this material world. They have very little knowledge about you. Then what can ordinary human beings and mental speculators know of you? It is not possible for anyone to enumerate the unlimited transcendental qualities of your lordship. No one, not even the mental speculators and the demigods in higher planetary systems, is actually able to estimate the length and breadth of your form and characteristics." So even you take people who are more, the scholars, the renunciates, and all these things, even they can't. You know? "We think that even your lordship does not have complete knowledge of your transcendental qualities. The reason is that you are unlimited. Although it is not befitting to say that you do not know yourself, it is practical to understand because you have unlimited qualities and energies, and because your knowledge is also unlimited, there is unlimited competition between your knowledge and your expansion of energies." You know, it's just like, you know, someone said, "Can God do something? Can God make a mountain so big he can't lift it?" And Prabhupada said, "Yes, and then he'll lift it." You know, so he knows more, and then the will always expand, and then he'll have that like this. So it's always ongoing. "The idea is that because God and his knowledge are both unlimited, as soon as God is cognizant of some of his energies, he perceives that he has still more energies. In this way, both his energies and his knowledge increase. And because both of them are unlimited, there is no end to the energies and no end to the knowledge with which to understand the energies." Because they're always expanding. What you see is that Vaikuntha is there, but at the next moment there's more Vaikuntha. Right? So the unlimited is always unlimitedly expanding. And, you know, that means Goloka is getting bigger. The material world is getting bigger. So that means more and more energies are being manifest. More and more details and variety is being manifest. Right? Because otherwise, why manifest the whole Vaikuntha planets and just keep going unless there's more aspects that you can add? Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that at every moment there's more. Right? So it's not that he knows more about what he has, it means what he has keeps expanding. Even what he is, right?
The point of quality and quantity. So qualitatively, Lord knows. Quantitatively, he may not know like that.
No, but the point is that the qualities also, it says, are expanding. So when he gives 64 qualities, these are the main ones that we can relate to. Otherwise, he has unlimited qualities. Because you can go down and finer, like this. The energies also. You have the major, and then within those.
Why it is sometimes difficult to perceive this thing, because it is mentioned like Lord has mutually contrary shaktis simultaneously.
Okay. Yes, yes.
In material world, that concept is difficult to grasp.
Because we're trying to use intelligence. So because Krishna is unlimited and he has reconciled all these qualities that are seemingly contradictory to each other. So, but through his achintya shakti, inconceivable shakti, he can make that happen. So in the material world, we're not connected to the Lord and his inconceivable shakti. That's why we can't conceive of it here. Does that make sense? You know, it's like the frog in the well. He hasn't seen the ocean, so therefore he can't relate to it. Right? But those who have seen the ocean, they can relate it to, you know, they can relate it to you. Is that? So in other words, the material world's always going to have problems. You can never fully understand. You can't things that are opposite, contradictory, then that's right there. That's the break. That's the scene is the breakdown in logic. But in the spiritual world, that's not a problem. Right? Does that make sense? The idea is that because God and his knowledge are both unlimited, as soon as God is cognizant of some of his energies, he perceives that he has still more energies. In this way, both the energies and his knowledge increase. Because both of them are unlimited, there is no end to the energies and no end to the knowledge with which to understand the energies. God is undoubtedly omniscient, but the personified Vedas say that even God himself does not know the full extent of his energies. This does not mean that God is not omniscient. When an actual fact is unknown to a certain person, this is called ignorance or lack of knowledge. This is not applicable to God. However, because he knows himself perfectly, but still as his energies and activities increase, he also increases his knowledge to understand them. Both are increasing unlimitedly, and there is no end to it. In that sense, it can be said that even God does not know the limit of his energies and qualities. Because we don't know because we have no access. But he just increases his knowledge, and he understands them. And then he increases his energies, and then there's something more to understand. So he, by his own free, he, by his own self, he does this. While we don't know something, we're in ignorance, because we're not in control of that. We're not in control of knowledge. We're not in control of ignorance. We're not in control of what we want to know, or the senses by which we can know. Right? So that's the point. So we're different. Krishna's not like that. This is just his pastime. Both are increasing unlimitedly. He also increases his knowledge, but still as his energies and activities increase, he also increases his knowledge to understand them. Both are increasing unlimitedly, and there is no end to it. In that sense, it can be said that even God himself does not know the limit of his energies and qualities. Avan manasa gochara. To understand the length and breadth of God is beyond the jurisdiction of our mental speculation. Therefore, a person who is actually learned and sane does not claim to be God, but tries to understand God, making distinctions between spirit and matter. By such careful discrimination, one can clearly understand that the Supreme Soul is transcendental to both the superior and inferior energies. Although he has a direct, the Supreme Soul, yeah, is superior to both the superior and inferior energies, although he has a direct connection with both. Right, so the point is, we don't claim to be God, we try to understand God. We can tell the difference between matter and spirit, like that, but we know that God's beyond, like that. After much deliberation and consideration, when one has attained the perfection of knowledge, one comes to the conclusion that Krishna, or God, is the original cause of all causes. Instead of speculating about the measurement of God, whether he is so long or so wide, or falsely philosophizing, one should come to the conclusion of the Brahma Samhita. Krishna, God, is Sarva Karana Karanam, Brahma Samhita 5.1, the cause of all causes. That is the perfection of knowledge. Thus, the Vedanta Shruti, or the prayers offered by the personified Vedas to Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, were first narrated in distinct succession by Sanandana to his brothers, all of whom were born to Brahma at the beginning of the universe. The four Kumaras were the firstborn sons of Brahma. Therefore, they are known as Purva Japta. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that the Parampara system, or the disciplic succession, begins with Krishna himself. Similarly, here in the prayers of the personified Vedas, it is to be understood that the Parampara system begins with the personality of Godhead, Narayana Rishi. We should remember that this Vedanta Stuti is narrated by Kumara Sanandana, and the narration is repeated by Narayana Rishi in Bhadarika Ashrama. Narayana Rishi is the incarnation of Krishna for showing us the path of self-realization by undergoing severe austerities. Right, so there it's going back. They've heard from the Lord, now they're speaking, now it's being spoken by the Kumaras, then Narayana Rishi is speaking, and, you know, all these things. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita is stated, Ekale Ishwara Krishna. Right? So they're speaking, Narayana Rishi is speaking, he's telling this story. Right? But the point is he tells the story because that's how then it works. Because if you tell the story, you're going to remember it better than if you don't tell the story. Right? So then he's telling it, just like Vyasadeva is the Lord. Right? But he's narrating the Bhagavatam, which he spoke to Sukadeva. Right? Then Sukadeva spoke to Sutta, and now Sutta is speaking to the sage at Naimisharvanya. So Vyasadeva documents not what he first spoke, but what is being spoken by Sutta Goswami. Does that make sense? Right? So in the same way, even though it may be a discussion Sanandana Kumar, then the narration is repeated by Narayana Rishi. Right? So it's because then that's how it'll work nicely. It's a nice story, it's gone through, there's a lot of discussion, because then the points that are being made, you know, Vyasadeva's made his point, Sukadeva Goswami has given his realization, Sutta Goswami has given his. You know, and so then it becomes a very nice position. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said, Ekale Ishvara Krishna, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adilila 5:142. Krishna is the only Supreme God. Arasabhritya, all others are his servants. Jare Jaiche Nachaya Se Taiche Kare Nritya. The Supreme Lord, as he desires, is engaging all the living entities in different activities, and thus they exhibit their different talents and tendencies. This Vedanta Stuti is thus the original instruction regarding the relationship existing between the living entity and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The highest platform of realization for the living entity is the attainment of devotional life. One cannot be engaged in devotional life or Krishna consciousness unless one is fully free from material contamination. Right, so here is that devotional life means that's all you do. You know, so then pure devotional service, as we're freed from these, you know, the contaminations. But how do you free yourself? Only through devotional service, because material activities can't do that. Right? Narayana Rishi informed Narad Muni that the essence of all the Vedas and Vedic scriptures, namely the four Vedas, the Upanishads, the Puranas, and the Vedanta Sutra, is to render transcendental loving service to the Lord. In this connection, Narayana Rishi has used one particular word, rasa. In devotional service, this rasa is the vaya medium, or the basic principle for the exchange of dealings between the Lord and the living entity. So that's the point. But if there's some other rasa, it's mixed, Krishna's not interested. Because he has no material connection. So, therefore, why would he be interested in something that has material connection? So when we come to the platform where pure devotional service, then there's no connection. That's when then one can directly interact with Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's what we're trying to get to, yes.
Why would they use rasa here? It sounds like tattva fits better. In this situation.
Nobody says he's used one particular role. So devotional service, this rasa is the vaya medium. So you may explain all that through the tattva.
Right.
But what you're trying to explain is that rasa, the dealings of exchange between the Lord and the living entity. That's what you're trying to explain. Everyone's trying to explain rasa, that's the highest position. But well, one will do it through explaining the position of the living entity, the position of God, the relationship, the material world, devotional service, all that. Does that make sense? He's not going into a exposition on the details of rasa.
Right.
Because the point is unless one is purified, why would you even appreciate that? Right? So therefore, they're explaining the philosophy that's there. But the point is to come to that position where one is able to have a exchange with Krishna based on pure, you know, prema. Isn't that the goal? That's the goal of the tattva, no? So then, mentioning it as the goal, why would that be a problem? Because he says, it's in devotional service, this rasa is the via medium or the basic principle for the exchange of dealings between the Lord and the living entity. So it doesn't contradict. It's not. It's just this is the whole point of all that other points that are made. Huh? You're trying to get to that platform, no?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's then what's happening.
In other sense, can we say that why to have a relation, we can say the tattva, and then how to have a relation is we also call it rasa tattva.
Yeah, but the point is, his point is it's tattva. So which tattva, it's this and that. But the point is you have a goal, because you can only describe that. You can't actually tell the experience. So you can only tell symptoms of rasa and the situations and how the mechanics of the exchange. You can't explain rasa. It's not possible. So if someone says they will explain rasa, then you know that they're bogus. They can only explain, you know, what goes on. You can explain about the different, you know, how you say staibhav and anubhav and all these different things. But you can't experience you can't express the experience that's there. You can say unlimited happiness or this or that, but the point is that you can't express. So they just talk about those things that are being exchanged between the Lord and the devotees. And then by having faith in that and absorption in that, then at some point we also start to taste. Right? Some taste is there, otherwise why are we, you know, doing the same things day in and day out? Right? Means, you know, it's just like, you know, we're chanting Hare Krishna. We've been doing that and singing that for a long time. Right? Even your most favorite song, how much of the day could you sit down for 2 hours straight and just go through the words, the lyrics of the song, or throw in the music, or whatever, how much you want, and just go through it after again and again and again and again and do that 2 hours straight. No. And then you're going to do that every day. And you're going to do that every day for the last 20, 30 years.
Could you?
Huh?
To do that, you have to be paid well.
Paid well, yeah, very well. You know, is that so? The point is then, in other words, there is a taste, but it's just compared to what they're talking about, what taste you can get to. That's just because of the, you know, the being distracted by the, you know, the material conditioning. So because of that, then we're getting something, but we're not getting as much as we could because we're trying to get taste in other places. So then, how much? Does that make sense? And it's just like you have a huge, you know, buffet. How much can you taste? Right? And you go and, you know, even you want to get everything, you only get this much. But you know that there's one really super excellent preparation. You can just go and eat that. And how will you enjoy that? When you just think this is the best. But if you're thinking, well, you know, what about the other ones? You know, then you really can't, you won't be able to enjoy it. You'll be distracted. So one is that rasa, in that relationship with Krishna, then that taste is very focused. So if it's focused, then it becomes, you know, intense. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay.
So in general, Maharaj, all the Vedic scriptures are aiming at rasa only as a preparation. Even we speak tattva, all the scriptures, they aim at rasa.
They aim at rasa, yes, that's the whole point. They always aim at rasa. We understand that with the breathing of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there issued forth the four Vedas, namely the Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, the Sama Veda, and the Atharva Veda, and also the histories like the Mahabharata and the Puranas, which are considered to be the history of the world. The Vedic histories like the Puranas and Mahabharata are called the fifth Veda. The 28 verses of the Vedanta Stuti are to be considered the essence of all Vedic knowledge. The four Kumaras and all other authorized sages know perfectly that devotional service and Krishna consciousness is the essence of all Vedic literature. And they preach this on different planets, traveling in outer space. It is stated herein that sages, including Narad Muni, hardly ever travel on land. They perpetually travel in space. I mean, like, you know, would you walk on the streets of Calcutta, or would you travel in space to get to where you're going? So we see Calcutta like that, and we might think other parts of the world are okay, but you know, Narad Muni in that sees everything like Calcutta.
Or worse.
Yeah, or worse. Yeah, and then there's Calcutta, right? Verses 42 to 50. So that's the prayers of the personified Vedas. The duties of the transcendentalists. The Supreme Lord, Sri Narayana Rishi, said, having heard these instructions about the Supreme Self, the personality of Godhead, the sons of Brahma now understood their final destination. They felt perfectly satisfied and honored Sanandana with their worship. The BBT purport states, Srila Jiva Goswami explains that Atmanu Shashanam can be understood both as instructions given to benefit the jiva souls and as instructions about the living entity's relationship with the foundation of all existence. Right? Because what benefits jivas is understanding their relationship with Krishna. So it's not two different things. Similarly, Atmano Gatim means both the destination of the jiva soul and the means for reaching the Supreme Soul. Because in the spiritual world, the process is, you know, the, means the process is the goal, but it also still remains the process. Right? I mean, develop love for Krishna, you chant Hare Krishna, but when you develop love for Krishna, you still chant Hare Krishna. By hearing the 28 prayers of the personified Vedas, which comprise the elucidation of the Brahmopanishad, spoken at the beginning of this chapter, the sages assembled in Brahmaloka made great progress towards their goal of pure love of God. Right? So that's the whole, what it's trying to establish is pure love of God. There isn't something else to establish. There's no other real purpose of philosophy, of religion, of anything. It's simply is how to establish pure love for Krishna. That's actually all there is. Other things are just so you have technique how you can use, just like you want to cook for Krishna. There is technique. And you can expand that technique. But the point is it's about cooking for Krishna and pure devotion. But if expanding technique, you forget that devotion, then better cook simple. Does that make sense? But if you can do both, then why not? Then you can do nice things for Krishna. Yeah? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.